This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, it has been a busy week, even with the holiday, even with July 4th. We're going to break down all the news from around the world in our country today on Jay Seculo Live. Get you up to speed on what's happened this week.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Seculo Live. It's great to talk to you today. As I said in that opening of the broadcast, you know, so much has happened this week, and it's been a holiday week as well, and I hope you had a great 4th of July. But we wanted to kind of recap for you so that you're up to speed on all of the news that occurred this week. I mean, for instance, let's just start off with earlier in the week. The President of the United States is at the G20. The first big news to come out of that, even before he left for the trip, was that he would have a side meeting with President Xi of China to discuss the tariffs issue and an ultimately a new trade deal with China. The stock market responded incredibly well. The economy in the U.S. responded incredibly well, and that's good for all of us. Then, what's important was what happened next as well. They had the meeting. And what did they announce from the meeting? No new tariffs. And they've handled the issue on the 5G issue. So two major issues there. Just the current tariffs will remain in place until a trade deal is worked out. And both countries believe that a very good trade deal that's good for both the U.S. and China, that benefits us better than where we were before, but is also good for our trading partner, China, will be worked out as soon as possible. But it also got into a specific issue with Chinese, the 5G speed and the use of mobile devices as well, that was also kind of catching up this deal. But then the president took it a step further, literally a step further. He sent out a tweet. That's not unusual for President Trump, but it is even for the president to send out a tweet asking the leader of North Korea, Chairman Kim Jong-un, to meet him after the G20 was over at the DMZ. But when I said the president took a literal step, it wasn't just by saying, hey, meet me and we'll have the meeting, you know, where I stay on one side and you're on the other by the table and I don't actually visit North Korea and you don't actually go to South Korea. First, what was amazing was that the North Koreans responded and said, absolutely. And Kim Jong-un was there to greet President Trump. And so there was that handshake. But what was even greater was the literal step that the president took. He became the first president while in office to visit, in the words of Kim Jong-un's translator, the first president to ever visit North Korea. Now, it was brief, but it was historic. And after that, it was not just a photo op. They had an hour-long one-on-one discussion so they can get their nuclear talks restarted. And by the way, to contrast it with Iran, what are we not seeing from North Korea since these new relationship has been developed? Launches of long-range missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles flying over our allies like Japan. That has, you know, Rocket Man has, that's all ceased. Now, if that was to start again, I think the relationship we'd go right back to. By the way, we haven't changed any of our sanctions on North Korea. This is just about talks. So it shows the great ability of the president diplomatically. And it was a huge moment for the world and for the United States. Finally, as well, the Iranians announced that they're going to do whatever they want when it comes to enriching uranium by Sunday. And there's nothing you can do about it unless you can re-implement the nuclear deal exactly how it was. And that would mean the U.S. being involved in allowing Iran to be part of U.S. foreign business transactions. And Iran is being very aggressive, saying they're even going to operate and open a plant which produces plutonium, which you have to produce to make a nuclear bomb. And we find out, and we're going to get into it, just how long it will take Iran. We're talking months, not years, to create a nuclear weapon if they continue down the line of the rhetoric that they're now using. When we come back on Monday's broadcast, we'll know if Iran has made good on this threat or not. Also, get into a little politics. Major poll changes since that first Democratic debate. So we're going to get you up to speed on Jay Seculo Live today on everything that's happened this week. And don't forget, it's a matching challenge week. Fifth day of the matching challenge. Donate online at aclj.org. Your donation is doubled. We'll be right back.
Place the stars up in the sky, gave every ocean wave its boundary. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Kim Jong-un's official North Korean translator speaking in English to the press after President Trump did something that no other president has ever done before. And by the way, he's doing this at the same time that North Korea has completely ceased their long-range missile test. So there's no more ICBMs flying over our friends in the South China Sea or Japan or South Korea. Take a listen to Kim Jong-un's translator.
President Trump has just walked across the demarcation line that made him the first U.S. president to visit our country.
Skip Ash is a retired colonel, served in the Pentagon, but also served in South Korea. Skip, explain to people what the DMZ is like. I know it from people that have visited. I haven't before. Can be very tense, obviously, when you have two major world leaders like this who are not, even though they have tried to start a new relationship, are certainly not on the same side of many issues. Have this kind of impromptu, very quickly scheduled meeting that President Trump, by using his unusual methods, which are obviously paying dividends by putting out the tweet that he would like to meet Chairman Kim on the DMZ border. And then, so first, before we even get into him stepping in to North Korea and being the first president to do it, explain what it's like. I know tourists can visit the DMZ, but it's very tense.
It is indeed. It's along the 38th parallel that splits the north from the south, and it's a very highly armed place. There are fences to the north, there are fences to the south, and the demilitarized zone is the area in between. It's about 3 miles wide, and it's highly armed. There are armed forces on both sides, highly weaponized. They are watching each other all the time. There are observation posts on each side, and it's probably the most heavily armed border in the world today. So it can be a dangerous place. There have been incidents in the past where Americans have been killed, Koreans have been killed, and so forth in that area. There's a place called Panmunjom, which is where the president was, where they can meet if there's some type of problem. There's a meeting house there where the South Koreans and the U.S. sit on one side of the border on this long table. The North Koreans sit on the other side, and they discuss whatever the problem is. So it's a very tense place very often, and And the idea is for the president to be there. We have had two presidents who have actually gone to North Korea, but they were out of office. So this is the first president who is officially representing the United States in office to step into North Korea. And that's right. Significant.
Yes. And Skip, it can also be dangerous. I mean, that part of the reason why even the president being right there, after making that historic step into North Korea, they actually had a pretty extensive conversation, a 50-minute long discussion. So it wasn't like a 2-minute. Some of the press said it was just a photo op. But they had a significant discussion following the historic moment, nearly an hour. But for former presidents and U.S. officials that have been concerned about kidnapping, have been concerned about what they might do once they're a high-level U.S. official, not even necessarily the president of the United States, and not someone who's just a former president like a Jimmy Carter type or Bill Clinton, who never looked very happy. Jimmy Carter kind of looked happy sometimes to be there, but Bill Clinton certainly never looked happy when he was forced to do that photo with Kim Jong-un's father. And you also had people like Bill Richardson, former cabinet secretary, former governor, go. But they were going on diplomatic missions and that were previously agreed to have a, and they were all former U.S. officials, not current. There's always been a concern about kidnapping and ransom. Who knows what would happen? Because such an unpredictable regime, even though it appears that they have a decent one-on-one relationship, even if the U.S. and North Korea are not agreeing on everything.
Well, that's absolutely right. There have been some attempts by North Korean guards, for instance, to escape to the south, and the North does not hesitate to shoot at them across the border into the south, which endangers all the people in South Korea. So it can be a very tense situation. When you're up there, people are staring at each other from just feet away, on one side of the border to the other. You have guards on both sides. So and the people who are chosen normally are chosen because of their stature and everything else. I mean, there's a big bit of propaganda on both sides at these places, but there have been sufficient shootings across that DMZ where people have been killed that it definitely is dangerous. Two Americans were killed a number of years ago and with an axe when they came across and killed the Americans with an axe. So it's wow. It can really be a tense place. I served two times in Korea, and both times I was in the area just south of the demilitarized zone, and our facilities were within artillery range of the North. So it's you're living there under that threat all the time.
Let me go right to the phones. If you've got thoughts on this, maybe you've served in South Korea. You've had family members who have served. I know we have a lot of veterans and family members of veterans or even current service members. Love to hear your thoughts on what President Trump is doing to change this relationship. 1-800-684-3110. And your thoughts about how the media tries to play it down as a photo op. I mean, it's just absurd. There's been no long-range missile launches since they started meeting. The president said if they do that, there'll be more sanctions, more action. It looks like they're going to restart talks. They kind of already have. And the president makes history by being the first president of the United States to ever be current president, not former, to visit, as the North Korean translator said, even though for a few moments, North Korea. It is historic. This is the Nixon goes to China kind of thing. It's the beginning of it. And whatever you want to say about President Nixon's rest of his history, it opened China. It changed things. And we're going to get to China later in the broadcast because that's still, because of their opening, they play a major economic role with us and the tariff issue. And we've got good news on that, which is helping the stock market as well. But I want to go to the phones. Let's go to Scott calling from Colorado on line one. Scott, welcome to JSecio Live.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much for my call. I appreciate it. Traditionally, the left has been about peace and going all the way back to the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And I think it's disingenuous for them to say that Trump now is buddying up, kind of chumming up to these leaders. And I would ask, what would you prefer, bombs, missiles flying over? I mean, I've always felt Trump has a high degree of social intelligence.
Yes.
With people, and he's masterfully maneuvering these leaders to destinations
right.
Other people couldn't.
Right. As someone, again, who has spent considerable time with the president, as part of a junior member of the president's legal team, to say the least, but I spent the honor of spending time with the president, I will tell you, his ability to look people in the eye, size them up, as you said, masterfully being able to maneuver what may appear like, hey, he's trying to buddy up, is a negotiating and a strategy. And there's a bigger picture here, you know? So don't judge it all by one picture and a handshake. We don't know what went on in the 50 minutes. And he may have been very pleasant with Kim Jong-un. That may be still part of the strategy, so long as the ICBMs are not being launched. I want to go to Than Bennett. I know we're having some trouble with the studio there for video. But Than, one key is that the Democrats, it's interesting. They're so critical about these moves. I think what the criticism is, they don't want to be spending the money on the military so that you can have a strategy like this. They don't like the number one spending priority of the Trump administration is our U.S. is rebuilding what was a crumbling U.S. military.
Well, I think it's been interesting on the part of the Democrats, Jordan, because they have not been able to sort of mirror their messaging on North Korea with their message on Iran. Because, look, there have been a couple of times on Iran, I know you're going to get into this more later in the broadcast, where a military response from the president certainly would have been justified. I mean, honestly, Jordan, I think he showed greater restraint in Iran than I probably would have. And yet, when you juxtapose that with what's happening in North Korea, those who are running against him on the Democrat side of the aisle haven't been able to synchronize that messaging. Look, there's a double standard in the media, but I think there's also a double standard from his opponents. But the part of the conversation that I think they are leaving out, Jordan, is something that the president said to reporters after the meeting. He said, look, sanctions are still on. This is not about removing pressure from the regime, but this is about keeping the end goal in mind. He is trying to build confidence. Skip called them confidence building measures. So it's sort of a dual pronged approach, Jordan. And if we want peace in North Korea, if we want North Korea to actually come into the civilized world, they have to see a future that is attractive to them. And the future has to be attractive to the leader as well as the people. So I think the fact that sanctions are still on, that maximum pressure is still the approach, that's the part of the conversation that those who are running against the president have been conveniently leaving out.
Yeah, we've got questions coming in too. And we're taking your phone calls 1-800-684-3110. How does this situation with North Korea differ from Iran, which Iran has now announced that it has breached the nuclear deal limits on enriching uranium, that they have basically violated the nuclear deal that the U.S. pulled out of, but that the rest of the P4+1 was still a part of. And they've said, you know what, we're going to start enriching uranium at a higher, quicker level. And they announced it to the world. So what are the implications of that? How is it different from North Korea? We're going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I'll tell you one thing that's different. Iran is taking provocative steps. North Korea has stopped the most provocative steps. 1-800-684-3110. Go to ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
We're going to get right to the history-making move by President Trump. You know, he sent out a tweet while he was at the G20 in South Korea. That's the 20 most powerful economies around the world. They gather. And he had a couple important things there. One we're going to talk about in the second half of the broadcast. And that was his extended meeting with President Xi of China on the tariffs issue. Remember, when it was announced that they would even have a meeting outside of the G20, an extensive meeting, the stock market went up. Well, now the stock market's going up again because they've announced that they will not be, neither side will be introducing new tariffs as they negotiate a deal on trade so that there's no more tariffs. So the stock market responding well to that. We're going to get into that more in the second half hour. We're going to get into some politics too in the second half hour because the first polls are out after that first Democrat debate, and there's certainly been some shifting around, much like we predicted while we were hosting our broadcast last week and on Friday, Sean Hannity's broadcast, when my dad and I hosted Sean Hannity's a full three-hour broadcast. We thank Sean for giving us the opportunity to do that. You know, with this history-making on North Korea, but we cannot ignore, and I'm going to get to your calls on that, and play some sound from President Trump on that as well. But I also want to touch on Iran. Harry Hutchinson, our senior policy advisor, a specialist in economics and law. So Iranian's foreign minister, Harry, announced today that the country has breached the JCPOA, the nuclear deal that we pulled out of as the U.S., but the other countries remained there, were trying to save. And that they've done that by starting to increase the amount of and stockpile of uranium, which they had a limit, and now they have surpassed that limit. So do you believe this will kill the deal for the Europeans, the Russians, and the Chinese? They tried to come up with an economic mechanism to get around U.S. sanctions, but it appears that that mechanism to allow some business was not enough money going into Iran, or wouldn't allow enough money to go into Iran for them not to move ahead and take yet another provocative step.
You ask a very good question. In my view, the deal will continue in part because of European community fecklessness. In other words, they are willing to continue to try to appease the Iranians, but to the extent that the Iranians are dissatisfied with the level of appeasement, I think the Iranians will continue to breach the JCPOA, and at the end of the day, the Europeans will have no choice but to leave the deal. So it's important to note that the Europeans have set up something called the Instrument in Support of Trade Exchanges, or INSTEX. It's complicated. It's so complicated that it has not yielded any transactions or any results up to the moment. The Europeans acknowledge that the tool, which would facilitate a kind of barter for humanitarian goods, will not do very much for Iran's gasping economy, which has been cratering over the last 6 to 9 months. And so what are the Europeans doing? They've set up this device really as a symbol of their own good faith, even though it does no good for the Iranian economy. And I think at the end of the day, the Iranians are going to walk away from the deal. And when the Iranians completely walk away from the deal, then the Europeans will have to give up. But right now, the Iranians and the Europeans are working frantically on trying to come up with some mechanism that will work. But based on the analysis that I have seen, the Instrument in Support of Trade Exchanges will not work, and the Iranian economy will continue to falter, and the American government is planning to tighten the noose in terms of sanctions on the Iranian government.
Trump administration continues to crush the Iranian economy through sanctions, and we've gone after the Ayatollah himself, first time ever. and his colleagues, you know, his Guardian Council of Religious Leaders, gone after the Revolutionary Guard, all aspects of the Iranian economy, including oil. The goal is, the ultimate goal is so that no Iranian oil is ever able to be exported anywhere. And I think that they're working very closely. They're getting very closely to that goal. If you look at the numbers of how much has dropped, it's gone from $50 billion. It's taken $10 and $15 billion hits out of a $50 billion oil industry. So it's already dropped significantly. Here is the foreign minister of Iran discussing this. Take a listen.
Only by illustrating authority we can put them in their place in negotiations, even if they are needed, because we never accept to yield to pressure. But if someone respects us, we'll enjoy our respect in return.
You know, I'll go to Than a bit on this. They're not respecting the United States, Than, and they're certainly not respecting these European and allies in Russia and China who have said, we're not going to pull out because of this breach. You know, we're not going to. So this wasn't enough for them. Iran will have to go further in their provocations and I guess produce more uranium before they pull out of a deal. But it may be the Iranians who pull out of the deal first, because they have no respect for the Europeans. They realize that without the U.S., whatever mechanism they try to create, they can't utilize.
Yeah, Jordan, I would say they're not only not respecting their negotiating partners, but they're actually directly defying them. I mean, look, how many times on this broadcast did we say in advance of this moment, Jordan, that Iran never intended to comply with the deal? And if the European powers that are still in this deal and still engaging in this back and forth don't see this now, Jordan, I think they're just willfully blind to it. I also would just point out, I think there's a lot of double standard here in Washington, D.C. as well. I mean, you take this situation with Iran and North Korea. Senator Feinstein said that sanctioning Iran's supreme leader and exchanging insults does nothing more than push a diplomatic resolution further out of reach. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over and expect different results. And then you fast forward to the North Korea situation, Jordan, and that's essentially exactly what they want to do. When there's a conversation between the two leaders, she wants to come out and say that diplomatic solution cannot be on the table. I think there is a lack of a willingness in Washington, D.C., Jordan, to see these things as a spectrum. And when you invoke China into this conversation a little bit, I think you'll see it. I mean, you know, China is the least hostile to us right now. North Korea is somewhere in the middle. And then Iran is outwardly provoking us. And the president is trying to engage all three of them. But obviously, you have to ratchet up the mechanisms you use the more hostile a regime gets. I don't think there's a recognition of that on the Democrat side of the aisle in Washington at this point.
All right, we come back. Again, we're going to refocus on North Korea and on China, because again, North Korea, history-making moment. We got some calls on that, Martin and Larry. We're going to take your calls right when we come back for our second half hour. We'll be back in just 3 minutes. We got a minute left here. Let me also let you know what else is coming up. So we're going to get back into North Korea. I think we've covered Iran for now, and we'll wait to see if the president has remarks on that. We'll get back into North Korea and also into China, because this was really important for our stock market. Right now, our stock market is rallying. The Dow Jones Industrial rose 246 points at the opening bell, just because of the meeting that the president had with President Xi of China, announcing that they would not have new tariffs on each other, no new tariffs on each other. But also an important move when it comes to high tech as well that we'll explain. You may have heard of Huawei in the news a little bit. We'll explain that with Harry Hutchinson, and we'll talk nuclear, we'll talk North Korea as well, and then politics. 1-800-684-3110, those Democrat debates, the polls are starting to come out. Pretty interesting numbers to look at. 1-800-684-3110. I want to take your phone calls on the show today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Freedom.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
President Trump overnight accusing Iran of violating the nuclear deal long before he became president. And Iran's president responding with a warning, saying his country will start increasing uranium enrichment this weekend.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Yes, I mean, this is the news of the day. You've got Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, after all of the provocations of Iran in these past few weeks, the oil tanker explosions, one of those may have been a torpedo that was used. We know others were magnetic explosive devices, six vessels there, an oil pipeline attacked by an Iranian drone, then a U.S. drone shot down by Iranian missiles. And so you've seen all these provocations. Now Iran has focused their attention not just on the U.S., but on the remaining members of the nuclear deal with Iran, the members who are actually in the moment trying to figure out a way to do business with Iran without violating U.S. sanctions. And they're trying to put this special mechanism together. Obviously, that is not enough yet for Iran. Now, Iran might be trying to play some game where they're going to see how much business could be done with this special mechanism. We're going to talk about it, explain it on the show, what Europe is trying to do here, where you can do business with Iran but not violate U.S. sanctions. But right now, it appears that Iran is saying that's not going to be enough. You've got to, quote, this is from Iran's president, we will take the next step in increasing uranium closer to weapons grades level this coming Sunday if they don't offer a new deal by then. So now they want a new deal, and we're going to increase uranium at any amount that we want, any amount that is required. We will take it over 3.67, which was what the deal allowed, which is for a nuclear power facility, which is what Iran says they want. Their advice to Europe and the U.S. is to go back to the negotiating table and do a new nuclear deal. Yeah, right. I don't think that this president or any of those European nations should do that. But they also are forgetting Russia and China as part of that deal. Now, what is even more dangerous from the Iranian president, and then we'll start getting to your phone calls and your thoughts at 1-800-684-3110, is that the Iranian president announced specifically that from July 7th, that's this Sunday, and onward, the Arak reactor, which is not in operation right now, if you don't operate according to the program and time frame of all the commitments you've given us from the JCPOA, which they can't because of the U.S. sanctions on Iran, there's no way to do that financially, we will return the Arak reactor to its previous condition. Now, why is that important? Well, this is in the Iranian president's own words, and it's very threatening. Meaning, the condition that you say is dangerous and can produce plutonium, we will return to that unless you take action regarding all your commitments regarding Arak. Of course, plutonium is a key component of a nuclear bomb. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're seeing brief reactions so far from the U.S., from the president, and from the White House press secretary, both saying, listen, we knew Iran was violating this deal the whole time. That's no surprise. But where the red line should be, how should the U.S. respond? I think we need to work with the Chinese and the Russians, who are a lot stronger than the Brits and the Germans on this issue, to really get Iran under control before military action is necessary. Anyone who calls in, by the way, with an idea or their thoughts on this will receive a copy of Unholy Alliance, kind of the Independence Day gift to you. It's written by my dad, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. And right now we're talking about how Russia could play a role, a serious role in this. They either let Iran move in this direction along with the Chinese, which would be unusual for them, or they join us, maybe reluctantly, but join us in saying, knock it off, Iran, or this is what we're going to do to your economy from our end, which really would cripple Iran if you put Chinese and Russian sanctions on them. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We've also got reaction from my dad, President Trump's attorney, on this latest lawsuit from the Democrats' House and Ways Committee on the Trump tax returns. I will read to you his statement as well, addressing that lawsuit. Again, continued harassment of the president by House Democrats. And we've got our matching challenge. Whatever you donate right now to the ACLJ in the month of July is doubled. We've had two great days. Let's make it a third one. ACLJ.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Secchio Live, as your phone calls come in, we will get back to Iran in just a moment. I do want to address a lawsuit that was filed by the House Democrats. The House Ways and Means Committee, the chairman is Richard Neal, a Democrat from Massachusetts. The House Democrats on that committee voted and now to sue and have now sued President Trump for his tax returns. So that begins the high-stakes legal battle over President Trump's tax returns. Here's the quote from the Ways and Means Committee chair when they filed the lawsuit against President. It's actually against the IRS Treasury Department and Treasury. I think the IRS chairman and the Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury. It's not actually against President Trump, but of course President Trump's interests are involved here. So this is what the Democrats said. Make it clear. It's not like the House to get combined, you know, in a bipartisan way, filed this lawsuit. This is a partisan lawsuit by the House Ways and Means Committee. The Democrats voted to file the lawsuit. So not bipartisan, the House of Representatives. It's a committee controlled by Democrats and the Democrats alone. That's why it's just to be clear on that. So what did they say? Well, in refusing to comply with the statute, which says they can get access to any tax returns they want, It does, though, has been interpreted to say they must have a cause, a reason, a real reason why they need those tax returns. You can't just get people's tax returns because you want them for political purposes. You have to have something behind that. But they say, in refusing to comply with the statute, defendants have mounted an extraordinary attack on the authority of Congress to obtain information needed to conduct oversight of Treasury, the IRS, and the tax laws on behalf of the American people. That's interesting because they're not requesting documents about the Treasury Department, about the IRS, or tax laws. They're requesting documents about, not on behalf of the American people, but about an American person, the U.S. president. And if they can just, whenever they feel like it, request the president's tax returns without any explanation for why they need it, well, then why can't they request yours? Why wouldn't they be able to request, you know, any of our tax returns this under this power? I feel like probably, as most people looking at this case have said, Treasury Department might lose it at the district court level. Ultimately, probably heads all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court will likely say Congress does not have the power to do this, and it's a question that is not appropriate for the courts. But here's the statement from President Trump's legal team, which I'm a junior member of, but my dad is a counsel to the president and a senior member of that team. Here's his statement. It's in the news reports about this lawsuit. I wanted to read it for you today, so since he could not be on the broadcast today. This is Jay Sekulow, counsel to the president. Quote, in response to the Democrat House Committee's lawsuit over President Trump's tax returns. Quote from Jay Sekulow, counsel to the president. We will respond to this latest effort at presidential harassment in court. I think Politico called it terse, and I think that's right. It's presidential harassment, and the president's legal team will respond as necessary in this latest effort, in just another way to harass the president in court, and it is presidential harassment. But that is the quote from my dad, the chief counsel of the ACLJ, and counsel to President Trump, Jay Sekulow. So I just wanted to address that today because I didn't want to act like we were ignoring that news as well. I know it's in the news, not making as much news, especially during a holiday week. As well, there's also some fun news. Think Progress, which I'll get into a little later, which is part of Center for American Progress. That was their news site, Think Progress. They could not stand us. They personally attacked Sekulows. They went after the ACLJ all the time. I mean, for years. Well, they're $3 million in debt. And guess what? The Center for American Progress wants to sell Think Progress. These are all nonprofits, by the way, I thought. But they want to sell Think Progress. So we were thinking, hey, maybe we'll buy Think Progress. Maybe we'll do a fundraising campaign where we will buy Think Progress. And maybe since I guess Think Progress is still operating today, that may make their website. That the ACLJ, hey, be on notice. We're going to be looking into some budgeting. We'll see how this matching challenge campaign goes. We know you're in some debt. And maybe we can maybe Center for American Progress is interested in so badly in a buyer that they would consider an entity like the American Center for Law and Justice. Not saying we're definitely going to do it, guys. I think progress. So, and by the way, most of you there right now will not be there anymore. I don't think so. I think you can assume that the direction of the website would considerably be changed. You know, I'm just playing with you a little bit. I don't think we would waste our money or your money, unless it was a really good deal. On buying a failing, yet another failing liberal news website. But I like to say, another one gone. And they were really nasty. I would get the alerts all the time. Really nasty about our family. Really nasty about the ACLJ. Really nasty about what Christians stand for, what conservatives stand for. And Center for American Progress, if they couldn't keep it going, and it was such a money loser for them, $3 million in debt, it just tells you the lack of of interest in those nasty stories they put up, which makes me feel a little bit better. Obviously, no one was reading it and looking at it. We of course get the alerts about it, but ultimately, you could see the impact of Think Progress when you realize they had none. They had so much impact that they are in $3 million in debt, and they're attached to a huge organization that could keep them going if they thought it was worthwhile and decided not to. So congratulations, Think Progress, on your death. We salute you. All right, 1-800-684-3110. I told you we would talk, continue to take your calls on Iran. And if you got on the show today, you'd get a free copy of Jay Sekulow's Unholy Alliance, which is about the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. We've talked about the role Russia could play. I'm going to get right to the phones. William in Georgia on line one. William, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Jordan. How you doing today? I hope everything is well with you. Two things really quickly. The first thing is what Iran is doing right now with this provocation is they're playing a game of what I like to call political chicken. Now, as far as like what Trump should do, President Trump should do, I think it's one of three ways he can probably handle this. The first way, which you presented before, which would be to get China and Russia involved diplomatically to intervene in the situation and join forces with us. But if worst case scenario happens and provocation gets to the point where military action is imminent, I think he should first take away all the assets that is contributory towards them actually going further with this program. And if that doesn't work, ultimately use military force to go in there to destroy those facilities where they're producing this uranium.
Well, let me go to Skip Ash first. Skip, the idea going in militarily to destroy this, these reactors, surprise, surprise, a lot of them built by the Germans and German technology, are not so easy to get to. They're built underground inside mountains. So, I mean, it's a major military undertaking to take out a number of these nuclear reactors and the ARAC plutonium reactor as well. I mean, so by taking that action, I mean, it'd be basically not full scale war, not necessarily invasion, but massive air campaign and probably on the ground intelligence also, because you got to figure out how, the best way to get at best weapons to utilize to get at actually destroying these very well built, we'll be honest, many of these reactors, which are hidden away in caves and mountains.
Absolutely. The Iranians aren't stupid. They have seen in the past what the United States has been able to do with respect to some of our weapons, the bunker busters and things like that. And therefore, they have hardened their structures and they have dispersed them. So we probably know where a lot of them are. We probably don't know where all of them are. But I think that we could make a big impact on their society by, again, attacking those things which we can attack. But the right now, we can't discount the fact that our attack on their economy is crippling the entire country. And you get to the point where they can't feed their people or they can't provide the proper energy for their people. There's going to be some type of reaction by the people, in which case they have to turn their attention from creating a future nuclear weapon to actually gain control of their country. So what we need to do, in my view, is we need to separate the regime from the people, support the people, isolate the regime, make sure the people realize who is responsible for the bad conditions in the country, which is the regime, and then support the people coming up and rising up against the regime.
Yeah, let me go quickly. Harry Hutchinson on the economic side, as William brought up, it seems like that's the first approach, is that we need buy-in, not just from Europeans, but we need the Chinese and the Russians to institute the same kind of pressure we are on Iran, because I think then the whole regime falls. It cannot maintain itself. It'd have no economy. There would be no place for its oil to be sold, even illegally or in the black market. And I think those countries may be able to be convinced if Iran continues to use rhetoric like we're going to do whatever we want with uranium enrichment. They don't want a nuclear Iran with a nuclear weapon, long range nuclear weapon.
I think you're right. I think the latest move by the Iranians may indeed backfire. It's important to note that in the face of sanctions, the Iranian economy is already cratering with unemployment approaching 20%, and oil exports have fallen by 75%. So if we can get buy-in from Russia and China, this could send the Iranian economy over the edge.
All right, we get back. We take your phone calls. All of you, hang on the line. I know the lines are full right now. You all get a copy of the book, Unholy Alliance. Thanks for calling in. So we get back. Remember our matching challenge at ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
We talked a lot about what the president's doing, and we're going to continue to talk about that, about China, and then about the newest poll out since the first Democrat debate, which has shown some interesting numbers that I just wanted to get you up to speed on, just so you know. And we're going to take your phone calls as well on all those topics. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. If you want to talk to us, 1-800-684-3110. I want to play a little bit of this because we are through the European Center for Law and Justice. We have full NGO consultative status with the United Nations. And Christoph from the European Center for Law and Justice, an attorney with our team based in Strasbourg, France, was in Geneva delivering a message on the genocide of Christians and specifically on the actions by going on in Nigeria, specific to one individual who was kidnapped by Boko Haram and by Fulani herdsmen attacking Christians. This is at the UN Human Rights Council. He is speaking to all of those ambassadors from all over the world. Because of you, we have that office in Europe, because of your financial support, and we have a team, even in those dark halls of the UN, places where I know a lot of you, are not big fans of the UN, I get it. But we're there, making our voice heard, making your voice heard because of you. Here's Christoph. He is French, but he delivered this message in English so that even more ambassadors would understand exactly what he was talking about. Here's some of that from today.
Thank you, Mr. President. Madam and Mr. Special Rapporteur, the atrocities being perpetrated against Christians by Boko Haram and the Fulani herdsmen have resulted in a rapidly growing humanitarian crisis. We only have to look to the genocide committed against Christians in Iraq and Syria to see what will happen if we fail to take immediate action. More Christians will be killed and many more will become displaced as these violent attacks force them to leave their homes in order to find safety. Such violence includes the murder of Christians, kidnapping of young girls, and burning of entire villages to the ground. One girl, Leah Sharibu, has been held captive by Boko Haram for almost 500 days simply because she refuses to renounce her Christian faith.
I mean, right there alone, Than, at the UN in Geneva, at the Human Rights Council. I presented there before. Usually we have our European team do it because they are more well-received. To have Christoph, to have that French team for our European Center for Law and Justice, which is fully supported by the American Center for Law and Justice, shows that we are not just an American organization, but a global organization. And so it draws even more attention. You've been there, Than, as well. You're going to handle the UN for us in the U.S. when the UN is in New York. I know you're building your team to go up there in the fall when the UN, when those kind of committees and ambassadors come to the U.S. But it's important. I mean, this goes to the matching challenge too, Than, that we're able to be represented there while we're, filing Supreme Court cases, while we're uncovering deep state action here, analyzing all these issues on the radio broadcast. We have a presence literally all around the world.
Jordan, I really think that clip you just played is a perfect example of why we have accreditation at the United Nations, because it's so important to connect the dots between some of these incidents that occur around the world. I mean, we think about genocide, right, largely at the hands of ISIS, and we've had a large project to highlight to the world the genocide against Christians and other religious minorities that took place at the hand of ISIS. But the case involving Leah Sharibu at the hands of Boko Haram, it was important for us to highlight for the world how the motivation is very similar, even though it's at the hands of a different group. And Jordan, I would just say we are going to head up to in the fall to the General Assembly in New York. Sometimes there are different opportunities. Sometimes there are oral interventions. Sometimes there are written interventions. And in New York, Jordan, a lot of that is more D.C.-styled advocacy work where you actually go into the offices of country embassies and press these cases on a staff-by-staff level. Sometimes you have to work it from the ground up. So I love the clip that you just played because it shows sort of the top-down approach in front of the Human Rights Council in New York. We'll approach it from a bottom up. And ultimately, Jordan, it's just the ministry of presence. You've got to be present in all of these places to press these cases.
As you said, on the U.S. side, we're more used to doing that grassroots way of going straight to a congressional office and their staff, or going to an ambassador and their staff. And in the European office, which is more used to doing it in the more grander settings. And I think so when you can do it both ways and hit it from both sides – has a massive impact. And the only way we do this, folks, is your financial support. That's it. Because you donate to the ACLJ. And the whole month of July is a matching challenge month. That means that whatever you donate is doubled. So let's start off the matching challenge really strong. You heard those words from Christoph from our team at the European Center for Law and Justice. And we're fighting genocide around the world because of your support. Go to ACLJ.org. Whatever you donate, $10, $20, $500, $1,000, you've got to make the first donation, and then we've got a donor ready to match it. So if you donate $20, that means that the ACLJ received $40. If you donate $50, you will be charged $50, but it means that ACLJ received $100. And if you did donate $500, that's effectively, though you're only charged $500, a $1,000 donation to the ACLJ. But you're only charged $500. So let's make today a great day of our matching challenge at the ACLJ. I know all of you who listen appreciate the work that we do and the analysis that we do and the court cases that we're involved in, the diplomatic work that we're involved in. This is a way of showing it if you are financially able to do it, whether it's the $5, the $10, the $20, the $30, and on up from there. All of it is matched, which means take whatever number you're charged on your credit card, and you know that you can that the ACLJ received double that because of your donation the whole month of July at ACLJ.org. I do want to get a little into China. We may have to save politics. I'll just run through politics really quickly because I love politics. So the newest poll out, Morning Consult, Politico. The biggest was there's a 12% of the here's the big takeaways. 12% of Democratic primary voters, this was the most picked, said that if their first choice for president doesn't make it through, that Kamala Harris was their second choice. That's always a big jump. Kamala Harris jumped 6 points from her previous poll position. She doubled her polling by that debate performance. She is now tied for third with Elizabeth Warren, who just remained basically the same place, I think dropped a point, which is what we said would happen. She wouldn't really go anywhere because she was on that first night debate. Unfortunately for her, she didn't get to get into any of the scrums and really show off her skills. So she didn't drop, but she didn't move up. So you've now got a tie for third. Bernie Sanders remains exactly the same place, which means his message, which was we said the exact same again, no different. It was like the same screaming at you, Bernie Sanders, except for we heard that before, and they're like nothing new for this time. So not exciting a lot of people. He's got his core group of supporters. He's still in second place, but let me tell you something. With Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris only 6 points behind him, I don't know how long that lasts. And then when Bernie Sanders starts going into third place or even lower, I think he's in real trouble. Joe Biden dropped 5 points in their poll. So a considerable drop in this poll. We'll look for some other polls as well. Tomorrow, just briefly, Harry, China. This meeting with Chairman, with President Xi was very successful. The stock market is going up. We didn't really fully get into it, but no new tariffs will be placed. They're going to work towards a deal. You think there'll be a deal before the election?
Yes, I think so. The news report suggests that there's a 90% chance of a deal. And that 90% of the deal itself, and the structure has already been negotiated.
This Huawei problem with 5G has also been, seems like it's been worked out.
Yes.
Started to be worked out.
And also China has agreed to buy more U.S. farm products. That's good news for American farmers.
It is good news, and it's good news for everybody with a 401k today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.